Right. It's hard to turn that song down. And when love is the higher law, right? Love is the higher law.
All you got is heaven.
It's really a great song. Great lyric.
What's up, Felicia?
Well, you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall. And, you know, it's pretty fun to know that we've got a new antenna up in Honolulu, K205. So now we are streaming live on the radio all across Oahu. We're going to have to get a little logo or something like that to really be announcing that well, because...
Does that reach all of Oahu?
It's going to reach all of Oahu, yeah. And there's a North Shore one that's still existing there, but...
So what's that number on the dial?
88.9 FM.
88.9 when you're on Oahu.
Right. Okay. And here's a little factoid. When you're listening to KKCR on Kauai, you kind of have to jump around the dial a little bit. You know, our main antenna is 91.9 FM on Mount Kahili, and there's one in Kilauea here, but there's a mountain in the middle of the island.
Right.
So when we get a little bit far to the west, on the North Shore, you got to go to 90.9 in the Hanalei Princeville area, and when you're in Anahola Moloa'a, it's 92.9, and so Anahola and Moloa'a, you know you are so loved when we have an antenna just for you. So now 88.9 in Honolulu, FM, all of this, and then streaming worldwide. And I am happy to be looking at all our people and many around the islands and some that just tuned in. So Kailua Kona, you know who you are. I mean, if you can call it out, Sharon, you know, we love you, and Shannon and Wahiwa and Honolulu. Of course, we have Japan, Los Angeles, many places around the world are tuning in just now. So that is exciting. On the show today, we're going to have a little bit of a mix.
Mix it up.
But one topic that will theme pretty strong is, I just came from court, right? It's the fourth day for Wailua Nui Ahuano, where the Coco Palms Hotel has been and would like to be again. But the real name for that area is Wailua Nui Ahuano, so we can call it by its real name.
Okay.
So Noah and Kamu are, again, the defendants there in that case. This was the fourth day, probably the most intense day of the trial, which is much bigger than really... I mean, the implications are much, much larger. I'll go into it in a minute after we...
Yeah, you're going to give us a breakdown?
I will do that, but we're talking about that on the show today. We're going to be... and I'll even have you do a little bit of research on... North Carolina and how the redistricting just failed today. It went to court and it was not allowed to be redistricted. We'll look at that in a little bit. We're going to talk about the legislative packet, because next Wednesday, not this Wednesday, but a week from tomorrow, is the opening of the legislature. And on Kauai Soapbox, we do a lot to sit there and look at public policy, so it meets the needs of the people.
Right. So you're going over, right?
I haven't bought my ticket yet, but very most probably. It's also the 125th anniversary of the overthrow of Queen Liliuokalani. So at the palace, Iolani Palace, there's going to be another big event there. And, you know, a handful of things about that. But what I'm excited to talk about, too, at the half hour, and I have my friend Indy Reeves in the studio with me.
Aloha, Indy.
Aloha. She can say hi. She's kind of getting used to being the microphone. Put your face right near it and just say hi.
Aloha.
Oops. Okay, there she is. So what we will be talking about at the bottom of the hour at 4:30 is yay, big yay that... we have had, finally, Alakai o Kauai is ready to be announcing its full opening. It's got the campus. It's going to be happening.
The new charter school you're talking
the
about.
The new lower grades charter school, the elementary charter school. It eventually will go up to eighth grade. It's not going to start right there. We'll go into that detail, too. But it's part of all this other mix. It's like empowerment. And I will even just give a little spoiler alert that... part of, you know, what we saw in court today is the impact of not being conditioned in regular school to think along the government protocol. Because that, to me, that's a very, very evident element that is there in court. So we're going to be talking about that then. I had told listeners that we would be discussing, some of the impacts of health insurance, and that's going to be another week. Because not always people can make it as planned. But Kauai's Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man and Edible Hawaiian Islands. So here we are.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
And we are also supported by Kauai Store, and we're going to hear from them first.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostiles. The store has authentic Kauai products, including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Ke ala nu'ukia KKCR. KKCR's mission statement. O KKCR ka hui leki o ku o ko'a no Kauai. He hui leki o ka iaulu e pai pai i ae e ka lehu lehu a e ho'o lele ana me ka ho'o laha ole. KKCR is Kauai's independent radio station. A community radio station supported by the people and broadcasting without commercials. Na pahuhopua KKCR. The goals of KKCR. E ho'oulu i ka hoi, e a o'aku, a e ho'ohau oli ho'i i na hoa ho'olohe. To encourage, to teach, and to also cause enjoyment in the listeners. E ma'alama, e ho'omau, a e ho'olau le apu i na mea a me kanohona Hawaii. To care for, to perpetuate, and to celebrate Hawaiian customs and lifestyle. Ho ike i ka nani a kea o ko ka ko kaiaulu a me ke kaiaulu ku waho. Showcase the broad beauty of our community and the outside community. He kahua o KKCR no na leo a me na mele laha loa pu no me ka laha ole. O ke ke kahu foundation ka mea e ho o holo ai ia mau papahana leki o. KKCR is a platform for voices and songs both well-known and underrepresented. The Ke Kahu Foundation facilitates these radio programs.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And I've been more and more playing that mission statement at the beginning of the shows.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I feel really good about reminding the listener about the origin and the purpose of Kauai Community Radio. And it was already being considered before the hurricane, but certainly the FEMA monies helped to manifest it. We had some musical friends help to manifest it, all kinds of donors, but a very big piece of it was coming from Butch Ke Kahu and Hawaiian rights, activism, sovereignty, you know, those elements. And so that's an integral part of this station, is to be keeping an eye on and wind in the sails of the perpetuation of the Hawaiian culture. And in this case that is like Koko Palms Hui versus Charles Hepa and Noah Espirito Mau, who are, it's an, a civil case to eject them from the land. They have been basically more than just holding vigil on the land. They have been working diligently as a community in there, restoring the he'au, restoring the awais and the lo'i, and that's the kalo fields, taro patches, the waterways, the fish pond, also known as a loka'ia.
Caring for the sacred sites.
Caring for the sacred sites. And so it's profoundly that case. And Kumuhina, who is, I would say, a really profound voice for Hawaii Nei, modern Hawaii, the new resistance movement, or the new renaissance might be a better, more positive word to say, the new renaissance that's happening. She is in there as a Hawaiian interpreter, Charles Hepa, also known as Kamu. He is fluent in Hawaiian, and so he is functioning in Hawaiian, and Kumuhina is translating to English. And so the whole case has got this like little baseline of her beautiful voice, deep, beautiful voice, sharing and translating it. So it is, you know, something that you have to concentrate through, and it's like a reminder of, like, what is all of this about, is honoring the past and what were crimes of the past. And, yes, people who are participating in the dominant culture, which is most people, right? Pretty much everybody has to participate in our Western economic system. But the court is very much designed for the Western economic system that looks at little tiny pieces of this much larger, concentrated archaeological site that was an active cultural site until it was basically extinguished and taken. It wasn't that it had naturally gone into nothing some time ago and was truly a thing of the past. It, you know, there was this transition that was unfortunate that happened with the overthrow and different elements, but what is the value of like the treating that as a commodity? And so this court case, which is about, it's called ejection, is how do we eject these people off it that are taking care of the land? And what has been excluded from this civil case is to look at the title. So that's a real interesting dynamic. If you can't look at the title when you're deciding who has the rights to be on the land, so it's talking about possession and who has the rights for the possession of the land. And so the land stewards, the people who are on the land, are essentially, in the most passionate and authentic way, Noah Espirito Mao, as he is speaking and sharing his reality, is really clear as a young man, he's 26, almost not even grasping what is the venue of the court, and that it is about land as a commodity and money. You know, the whole dialogue is really about stewardship and kuleana and what is, for him, a passionate, inherited responsibility for this land.
Felicia, mm-hmm. Caller wanted to pass on congratulations to Alabama. Apparently they won some sort of championship. Do you hear anything about that?
Oh.
So I'm so
okay,
not...
is it a football game, a college football game?
I think that's what it is,
okay,
yeah.
And I might even know who called in. Yay, I am so happy for the people who... Are
interested.
Yeah, yay. I celebrate with you and all the Alabama fans. I celebrate your win.
Yeah, me too.
And Kalamai, I apologize for my lack of knowledge and focus on the games. So sometime I'll have to get educated on the importance of the football games. But it's important to some people, so yay. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
So today... there was mostly cross-examining of Noah, and who has, you know, is kind of taking the lead for the defendant's case. And what came out a lot today, and I do want to applaud the judge, who is Michael Soong. He's in a very difficult position because the natural venue is so slanted just about commerce. And he is allowing the young men, I don't mean to call them young, forgive me, allowing the men, the defendants, to do their best to understand court protocol and do their best to tell their story against, you know, quite a lot of objection from the plaintiffs. But one piece that came out today, besides all the very dedicated stewardship of the land, is the threat that those guys are under, and I have no doubt that there is a deep amount of truth in that. And you know, it takes a lot of courage, because what these guys are really standing up for, and they are in the crosshairs of the much larger question of going, when do we make right for the crimes of the past, or do we just always allow the take? And somebody had put some piece on my Facebook page that I didn't get a chance to really respond to, but like, that's the thing about title insurance. Title insurance guarantees its titles. And the title insurance, if these guys lose, if the hotel loses the case, it, you know, that's a long shot, because the court is designed around Western commerce. But if for some reason the hotel loses the case on these Kuleana parcels, they have the remedy of going against the title insurance companies. That's why you pay for title insurance. They're saying, yes, this is yours when you buy it. And if it isn't, and that's going to come up in a different court. There's actually three separate cases to be able to determine this situation. But title insurance would pay for that loss. And I just want to remind everybody listening that the majority of the parcel, the majority of this whole property that I always just thought was part of the hotel, is really state land. So for 25 years, almost 15 acres of that state land has been, you know, flipped with whoever is the next buyer of the distressed sale. We've had it flip and flip and flip. And, you know, they're getting it for next to nothing. And most of the time they've paid a total, including taxes and lease fees, about $4,000 to $6,000. And now it's up to $8,000 a year for both the lease and the taxes. Aloha, you're on the air.
Caller, you're on the air.
Are they there?
I can barely hear you, just so you know. Hopefully you can hear me better.
Okay, I can hear you.
Oh, good, because I can barely hear you guys. Just something I want to throw out there that goes, just to add on to what you're speaking to, is I'm not sure people are even aware of this in general, but Coco Palms and whoever it is now, they might own whatever building they have, but they can't own that land. If they can lease it, and they lease the land, and I'm not sure if when it keeps passing from person to person to person, that these new owners even realize, like, they're leasing the land, they don't own the land there.
Can I speak to that? Because I've actually looked at the parcel maps well.
Yeah, please, I'm going to go on the air so I can hear you better.
Okay.
I'm going to hang up so I can hear you better on the radio.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Aloha. Bye. So the parcel that is underneath the building, I don't have it up in front of me, but it's like 2 acres maybe. That parcel is owned by Coco Palms Hui. Then there is a parcel that's where they have the construction container building, and the parcel right next to like the pump station for the sewage treatment. Both of those are state properties. And then all that open space behind, including what has the tennis courts, that is 15 acres, that's state land. Then these royal patent properties, the land claim award, or Kuleana properties that are in the back, one of them is a Kamauili'i land claim award, and one is a Kamauili'i and then Kapule land claim awards. Those are privately owned. Those are private pieces. So there is some land ownership. So in the Western system, there's three different parcels of state land and three different parcels of privately owned land. We could argue whether any land could be owned. I mean, that maybe that's what the caller was saying, that within what Kamehameha III had in these allodial titles, that land can't be owned, allodial meaning that it's going to always perpetuate with the intention of the land. But within the Western system, the majority of the land is actually state, but what's under contention is two areas that are private, are said to be privately owned, and it says Coco Palms Hui on it. And there is so many dynamics in it. It's I've tried to, like, be short and be brief right now. We can explore it a little bit more deeply later. But one piece that happens is this fragmenting of issues. So when we have three separate court cases and you look at one tiny piece in each case, one aspect, it can't be looked at holistically and comprehensively. So it makes it very difficult to have a coherent case. And that's where I want to say that Michael Soong, the judge, I think for the benefit of everybody, is doing his best to allow enough of the coherency. And what was coming out today, I want to be a little careful because I don't want to amplify the problem for the defendants, but is that they feel really at physical risk and they are being threatened, and it is a part for them that is, it takes a lot of courage to stand up because they are really challenging our economic system. If they win this case, it has a lot of implications for elsewhere. And even if they don't win the case, and in going through all of this, it is frustrating for investors to be willing to sit there and buy. But I have to say, and I used to be, like I would joke and say, I'd represent my demographic, white mainland capitalist, also known as the bad guy. I mean, I was always on boards or whatever. I'd be asked to be a representative of business. And when these guys make an investment, they bought this as a distress sale. And when you're buying on very clearly a rich, rich cultural site, even if you think you have the best of intentions to be able to perpetuate that culture, you're taking a big risk. It's a big risk. And so it is, in many ways, their fault. You know, when you buy something for next to nothing, you're taking that risk. It's a known risk. And so that is part of you know, what the developer has undergone. And so there's multiple pieces on it. And as we start to move into being ready to speak about charter schools, something that came up today in court was asking Noah where he went to school. And actually, both of these men had their education within a cultural context. And so one of them is very fluent in Hawaiian, but in Olelo, but both of them, central to their whole sense of purpose, is the perpetuation of the culture and actually existing within their culture. And I think for people of us that are so branded with the dominant culture, what would it be if we were demanded to live in a culture foreign to what is our own ideology? And so when we are looking at what's going on with them for that, is especially for Noah as he's speaking, you can just feel his authentic reality is going through the paradigm of land stewardship and responsible caretaking of the land, and the difficulty even in the lawyer, who has very much an American dialect, being able to both understand the defendant, and when that lawyer was cross-examining the defendant, the defendant couldn't understand him. So they're not speaking the same language. They're not understanding each other. And It just had so many really vibrant elements to it on that. And it didn't make me think that people shouldn't be learning within their own cultural school and upbringing. It caused me to feel like it's very good that we have this fluency in both cultures. It did cause me also to think that, you know, hopefully as these generations grow up, there will be younger people who are more a reflection of the dominant culture, who have this deeper understanding of Hawaiian culture, because the layers of ignorance were at least as striking for the plaintiff's counsel. They're educated and confident and almost painfully arrogant.
Felicia, we had a caller who wanted to bring attention to a court case going on Friday. Trevor Kaona, are you familiar with him? He's going to support a land claim for Kuleana lands in Ke Kaha. And the caller was wanted to bring people's attention to that. He said that he was one of the folks that, I don't know if it was you that read the names of
people. Yeah. And so there had been one, and there was a turnout of about 50 people. And did he say what time it is?
I didn't say the
time. Well, we'll find that out. And I was hoping to go to that case as well. These are all organized together. And I want to say to the caller, I really ask callers when they have a complicated call to please just say it on the air, because when Marshall's having a really in-detailed conversation with you, I can't even think, you know, so I'm stuttering and struggling to do it, and then we don't end up doing as good a job as bringing out your piece. It might be that you can text me the time at 652-4363. 652-4363. You can text me the time so I can announce that.
And, you know, a lot of times people say things so much better than I can possibly repeat it, too. You know, he had
right.
a lot of spirit and enthusiasm about the possibility for planting out the land, you know. He was really feeling the excitement that goes along with the possibility of land being returned to traditional agricultural purposes. But, of course, he said a lot better than me. So.
Right. I could see that you were having a vibrant conversation.
Right.
So I missed what was being said. But thank you, caller. And next time, please call and come on the air, because your viewpoint on it is infectious, and it really helps to bring it out. But I think that last time, when there was a really good turnout for that, it helped to make an impact. And I want to thank the Garden Island for, in that case, you know, telling the story. They've been pretty good at telling the story. Today it was a little overwhelming, because the headline said, report, occupants have no claim. So even though title history is not been allowed in court, the Garden Island reporter had gone through and done his own title search, and he found some pieces that seemed inconsistent with what was to the awareness of the defendants. In fact, when the court case started today, when there was a time for what was called housekeeping, one of the defendants brought this up, because he's saying, what does this mean, and how does this implicate our case? And the judge said, this is not a relevant part of this case, not a relevant part of the case. So it did not influence the judge, but it definitely affected the mood in the room, and it certainly bled over to Facebook. So in the court of public opinion, the Garden Island is creating a shift right there. Do we have our guest caller on the air? Marshall? I mean, is that who's waiting? Do you know who's on the air? Aloha, you're on the air. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, this is Denise Trentham.
Hey, Denise. Okay, thank you so much for calling in. So for the listeners, you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall. And I have also Indy Reeves in here with me. And Denise, can you say your last name one more time?
It's Trentham.
Trentham. So you are the new executive. Tell me what you are. You're with Alakai'i o Kauai. We're excited to be announcing to the listeners about our new charter school opening in Lauai.
And I can't wait. I'll be starting as the first director of the school.
So the director, that's like the principal, right? You're the leader of the school.
Correct. Uh-huh.
Okay. And Indy is in here also. Indy, say hi.
Hey, everybody.
And Indy was and has been on the board of directors since the beginning.
Not quite, but for quite a few years.
Quite a few years.
Yeah.
So
it's been a long time.
So, Indy, this is going to be K through 5 to begin with, or K through 4?
Yeah, our first year is K through 5, and we're approved to be a K through 8 school. We will be adding 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade in the consecutive years as we go along.
And this is going to be in Lawai at the Kahili Mountain Park?
Yeah, Kahili Mountain Park is technically in the Kailua zip code, but, you know, since Kailua is concentrated down by the shore, people consider it Lawai.
Okay, so inland from the highway in the Kailua area, a very, very beautiful, beautiful campus. And Denise, we're really excited that you're going to be helping make this school a reality. And can you share with the listener what the vision is for the school?
This is going to be a remarkable place for young people to come every day. We're focused on project-based learning, which is an opportunity for kids to get involved with things that are really important to them. It's a way for teachers to be creative with presenting the state standards and giving the kids a voice and choice in how they demonstrate mastery of those standards. It's a very exciting format for, like I said, both facilitators, which is what we call our teachers, and our learners. And we think it's going to be something that's going to really transform the way both kids and families look at education and what it can be.
So this is, can you give us sort of a typical morning as a kid comes to school? So a parent who might be considering if their child would thrive more strongly in a format like this, can you help a listener or a parent understand what this school format would be like?
Oh, certainly. We won't have bells. We're not a very typical school in that regard. So children would come into the classroom with their teacher. There'd be various activities around the room that kids would get engaged in before the school day officially begins with what's called a morning meeting. But students would be involved with putting away their things and getting organized. They have an ongoing project. They might meet with their team to, you know, plan out their day and some things that they need to do. Teacher would gather the learners in a morning meeting, talk about what the day is going to look like, discuss what some of the key learning might be throughout the day, if there's special activities happening and whatnot. The first portion of the day is usually spent in language arts-related activities. So if there's a particular project that they're working on that has a focus, say, in research, learners might be spending some time on the Internet doing some research there. They might be accessing textbooks to find information there. They might be reading in small groups texts that are related to a project. They might be working one-on-one with their teachers in a group that's focused on their particular needs, say, in developing reading skills or in working on comprehension strategies. They would move into a math activity that, again, you know, may be related to a project that they're working on. There is some instructional time. The instruction time looks a little bit different in a project-based learning school than it would in a typical school. Usually in a typical classroom, all of the students are on page 27 of a textbook, and the teacher's guiding the instruction. There's usually a lot of, you know, modeling at first, and then the kids do a number of problems. And it tends to be learning that's done in a discrete format. So it's not really related to anything that the students might be able to relate to or that they're passionate about. What we try to do in a project-based learning school is to gather a number of standards across curriculum areas so that anything that we're doing throughout the day is related to a project that the kids are involved with. So the things that they're working on in their math, the kinds of things that they might be doing during a science time, the kinds of things they might be learning in art and music are all related back to a driving question and a project that for little kids, for the younger students, might be as short as 3 weeks. For the older students, as they move through the school year, they become a bit more sophisticated in their experience with project-based learning. Could be as long as 4 to 6 weeks.
And full disclosure, I was on the advisory board to this school at one point, so I have a lot of enthusiasm for what it is, and so I get that there's some things like, if it's still correct, no homework. Is that right? So that, like, when kids come home from school, it's their time to really be learning with their parents and to be learning whatever is their passion. So it isn't something that is consuming outside of that time. And then, again, like, framing also project-based learning for people who know less about educational jargon, that means that while they're learning reading, writing, social studies, science, and everything else, it's framed around a project, like maybe it's studying the Polynesian voyage, or it might be, you know, some gardening, or, you know, whatever element it is, it's building all around that theme. Would that be correct?
Yeah, and I want to talk about the homework issue.
Uh-huh.
I was a teacher for many years in a traditional school district in California, as well as a principal and a district official within the district. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, back in the day, homework was really considered something that was viable and, oh, pardon me.
No problem.
Very useful for kiddos. The problem is that, you know, research has proven that for young children, up through even middle school, there's really no viable impact that homework has on the retention of knowledge, the development of skills, or on the solidifying of concepts. Research tells us that as you get into higher math, algebra, geometry, trig, calculus, that there is some benefit to additional practice at home outside of the instructional day. But for young children, there's really no benefit to it. So what would we want our kiddos to be doing, you know, during what would be considered traditional homework time? Reading something that they enjoy, working, you know, going to a family activity, discussing things around the dinner table without having to sweat the whole notion of an hour of homework after they get home from school. So, you know, it's not just a matter of, you know, we don't have any homework, and so the kiddos are like, oh, yeah, great, I want to go to that school because there's no homework. We don't have homework at our school because research tells us that there's no benefit to it. So we want to make sure that you know, we're basing our philosophy and our concepts and our practices on best practices and things that we know about what really works well for children.
And another understanding I have is that, like, maybe a child, I'm just going to make up an age, is 8, which is typically third grade. But if their math skills are something that are typically fifth grade and their reading skills might be behind third grade or whatever, they are going to be blended with peers that are at the same skill level more than necessarily age level. Am I remembering that correctly also?
Right. We do look at multi-age as a format, not really a format, but a way of organizing learners that seems to make a whole lot more sense. And the reason why I say that is because in a typical classroom of, you mentioned third graders, kiddos are about 8 years old, you get students in that classroom that have skills that range from kindergarten through probably sixth grade. 3 years on either side of the grade level is not atypical. And so in a multi-age format, you get the ability to have different age levels of students working together on their own ability level. So there's not, you know, there's no stigma about going with one group or another group because the groups are flexible all the time. They form and reform based on the needs of the learners. The other thing that project-based learning does is it lends itself naturally to the ability to differentiate for learners. Pardon me. especially in the area of writing, presentation skills, working with special education teachers to support the learning in the general ed classroom, and collaborating with the classroom teacher so that the curriculum is presented in a way that's challenging and accessible for all of the learners.
And this is a student-centered learning format. as opposed to teacher-centered. So student-centered means it's the child is creating their pathways of exploration as opposed to sitting passively in a desk and listening to a lecture style?
It would be an anomaly to find a teacher lecturing in a project-based learning school. There are times certainly for direct instruction. Not everything can be taught in small group, and so there are times where the whole group needs to learn a skill or concept, and there'll be instruction in that regard. But we're not following a basic textbook, going chapter by chapter and verse by verse within the textbook. What you'll find in a project-based learning school, and what we hope in particular that you'd find when you come to visit Alakat Okoai, is kids that are happy, that are engaged, that are asking questions, that are working with partners and in small groups, that are engaged with people within the community, people within the international community through the internet, working on projects that they're passionate about, bringing their voice to how they present and how they take their own slant and perception on the particular topic, and really being able to demonstrate in a viable way that they've mastered the standards that we expect them to be able to be very familiar with and to be able to show how they've learned.
And Indy, you've been involved in this for, I think, 4 years now. So that's commitment as a parent. Charter school, opening charter schools is no small effort. And for people who don't understand what charter school is, the state taxpayer, basically, it's another funding for the school. So there might be many ways that there's fundraising, but there's not a direct tuition. So this makes this kind of creative learning available to students from any economic background. So thank you for your commitment and your hard work. I want to throw a big shout out to Dr. B, who has been very passionate. There's been many people before you, after you. Can you tell us, what about this school has driven you to stay committed through this time?
Well, to be honest, I have to say it is the economics. I really don't have too much to complain about in terms of public schools. There's benefits, you know, to all different types of education because every child is different. I would prefer a smaller school because that is what I knew when I grew up in an elementary school that was pretty small. And the benefits, studies have shown many benefits of a smaller school impacting, you know, higher achieving students. So, you know, it's hard as a working family to afford the private schools here. And so, you know, that's the default is the public schools. So when I heard that there was some people wanting to open up a charter school, I contacted them and I said, how can I help? I really want, you know, my kids to go here. I want to help manifest the school. And I had no idea how hard this process was, but you know, the motivation of a mom is hard to stop. So yeah, it's my kids that motivate me, but in the beginning, and now, you know, the commitment is based on having this for the whole island and other families like mine, you know, that want something special for their kids and can't afford other private schools.
And what's exciting to me, I have taught and I was the chair of the youth council for a while for the county, and I've looked at a lot of youth at risk issues. What I really love about this format is not every kid thrives sitting still and learning from a book. I have to say, guilty, I was pretty good at that. But not a lot of kids are not, and particularly boys, it's not very often an easy match for their learning style. And so this helps with this creative, innovative way of learning that I think is a reflection of the 20th century or the 21st century. We're in the 21st century, right? So last century, what we had, public schools were modeled on the industrial model where they're training people to go to a job, punch a time clock, and do more really rote work. You know, they might work in a manufacturing plant, where now it really needs a lot of creativity, entrepreneurship, collaboration. So the skill set is also much more adaptable to what these kids are likely to be confronting as they come out of school. A question that I have, like Denise, what we were just talking about, you know, here we have a dynamic of cultures where even if children come from parents who are born in the continental United States, they get here, and on Kauai, it's really easy to connect to the earth, to the land, to the ocean. And so it's important to have those basic skill sets of how do we live on the land, how do we care for the land. Mm-hmm. And do you guys have programming that is designed to be extra fostering island knowledge?
Well, the location alone is the idyllic setting for, you know, learning sustainability on our island, and being a place to invite other groups to collaborate with from our community. We will have an orchard.
Actually, there's a beautiful mature orchard there. For people who haven't seen Kahili Mountain Park, it's an incredible campus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's right at the foothills.
At Newton Gap area, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we definitely plan to incorporate gardening, incorporating that orchard, you know, learning how to harvest, how to, you know, package and sell, you know, those, the fruit and everything that, you know, can come from the land, to, you know, by teaching the children these skills, you know, we're enabling them to be our future leaders here and become a more sustainable island. That's the point. And, you know, when children are encouraged to ask the questions, you know, where they see problems rather than, you know, sit down, be quiet and do as I say, you know, that's how you inspire leaders, you know, guiding them through the exploration of problem solving.
And the word alakai means basically like role model or student leader. So when we have the school name Alakai o Kauai, it's leadership training where we're guiding students to be leaders. So if people are interested in enrolling their kids, how do they do it?
So as of today, we now have an online form on our website, which is alakaiokauai.org. That's alakaiokauai.org. And you can find out all there is to know about our school. Our application is on our enrollment page. And there is, it's an online form that's really easy to fill out now. And our initial enrollment period was pretty early this year. We just wanted to get a head start on, you know, making sure that we can fill our school with the 165 kids that, you know, we plan to have.
Do you plan to have 165 children August 8th of 2018?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you consider that ambitious, or do you feel like that's in hand?
It's, I don't know if it's in hand, but I think it's definitely a reasonable goal that I think we can achieve. Our last few years were spent trying to find an east side location because that's where the, you know, the majority of our population is, and where a school, an extra school is, I think, really needed. But it was like impossible to find a location for the school on the east side. So we're not disappointed, really, to have to end up at Mount Kahili.
It's really amazing. It's where we had planned it in the first place, really.
Yeah, yeah, our first year or two, that was where we wanted to be, but we had some bumps in the road with the State Charter Commission. So we did end up where we started.
So are you going to have an event where parents can come and see that campus and have, like, you know, I'm just making a suggestion, but I would throw a little soiree there, because I think when people come and see it,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to not go, oh, my.
Yeah.
Everything there is is beautiful. It is just so idyllic
and
the environment.
This is where the Adventist school used to be for, I think, around 20 years they were there. So they really, we've got school buildings there and a giant gymnasium. It's really awesome. The kids are going to love it. Families are going to love it. And I totally agree that once people see it, you know, no matter how far you are, you're going to wish your kids could go.
There's cottages. It's just unbelievable. Do you have a caller question?
Yes. Caller would like to know if Alakai'o Kauai will need to fulfill the requirements of a normal public school.
Yes.
Yeah, we have to meet the standards that...
That the core standards that the state has, you know, it's the core standards,
right. And as a state school, we have to prove that we're meeting those standards through assessments. We get some flexibility in how we do the assessments, and you know, we're not judged only by testing, because as a charter school, the nature of charter schools here in Hawaii is as the kind of a testing ground for innovation in education. You know, the point being that if these charter schools can make alternative education work, you know, how can we then incorporate that into the Department of Education itself? So
when's the first day of school?
August 28th.
August 28th. Mm-hmm. And does the school calendar follow the public school calendar?
Well, we'll be starting about 3 weeks after the DOE starts to give us a little bit of extra time to prepare the school, the staff. We're investing a lot in professional development with our teachers. But the main...
like holidays,
the main
breaks
are going to be the same.
Okay,
yeah.
That's often very important for parents that have older brothers and sisters. Is there a phone number that people can call if they aren't computer-oriented people?
Yeah, our school phone number is 635-5110.
635-5130.
5110.
Oh, 5110.
Mm-hmm.
And it's alakaiokauai.org. Do you have any events coming up?
Well, we're really focusing on outreach right now, and we're trying to be somewhere every weekend with the table information. And this Saturday, we're going to be at the Vet Center where Kauai Middle School Choir is having an event for kids from 12 to 5 this Saturday. We'll have a table there. You can fill out an application. While we're there, we're going to have a computer set up for you to do that. And we are in the works of preparing a fundraising event, but that's...
That's coming up, and it's not totally organized yet. Denise, director of Alakai'o Kauai, you know, we congratulate you, and we have so much gratitude to the whole team that you all will be opening this fall, August 28, 2018. Is there a deadline for enrollment?
Yeah, let me say that our deadline for our initial enrollment application period is coming up in just a few days. That's January 12th. That date is in order to determine whether or not we need a lottery. By state law, that's what we're required to do. So on January 12th, we're going to close enrollment for a few weeks to allow the processing of those initial applicants. And then on February 7th, the enrollment will be opened back up again, the applications. So, you know, just keep checking on our website, you know, whether or not we take the application link, you know, off our site. I'm not sure we're going to do that or not, but you can always go to our enrollment page. It's alakaiokauai.org/enrollment.
So I want to applaud this hard work, this really important accomplishment that I think will really make a difference. I have gratitude to the regular school system, but it's not for everybody. So a lot of times when you take students out of the traditional schools that are have a learning difference, it's good for everybody because those kids who need to be kinetic learners and active learners, they're going to be thriving in an environment where it's not necessarily disruptive in another thing. And I don't want to make it a sound like only kids with a learning difference would be in a kind of creative format like this, but a lot of times parents know when their kid learns better by being inspired. Mm-hmm. Denise, do you have any final thoughts to share with the listener?
I just want to echo your comments to this board. They have worked so tirelessly for children they haven't even met yet, and they've been doing this for 4 years. They have just been relentless in pursuing an opportunity for parents to have choice and for kids to go to a place that is a little bit different, a little bit inspiring, focused on growing as a person. In addition to project-based learning, we are also equally concerned about the social and emotional growth of the learners. And this group of people from Kauai have made this happen. I've been involved with it in a couple of different capacities for the last 4 years, and I can't believe that I get to be there on the opening day to open the door and see those little Keiki walk through that door. We've been working on this for so long, and I'm so thrilled that this group of people has not given up and has continued to do whatever it took to get to this place, and I'm just over the moon that I'll be part of this.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
You know, I was just wondering, what is the teacher-student ratio plan to be?
We have, for our first year, we're going to have two kindergarten classes, which will have 20 students maximum each, and first through fifth grade, we'll have a maximum of 25 students. So, when you say teacher-to-student ratio, when you're thinking in terms of traditional classroom, it's average, but this is not a typical classroom where kids are usually working together, and so it's not quite as impactful when you think of that ratio.
And there's support teachers, and there's all different kinds of other things going on. Well, thank you both for coming in and sharing that with the listeners on Kauai. Denise, I look forward to meeting you. Thank you so much. Indy, thank you so much for coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you, Felicia.
Thanks
you're
a
welcome.
Lot, both of you.
635-5110 if you're interested in possible enrollment, or www.alakaiokauai.org. Denise, thank you so much for calling in.
My pleasure.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha.
All right. So that was wonderful hearing about that. And we are at the top of the hour. I want to, again, thank the KKCR listeners and supporters who make programs like this possible. Listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man and Edible Hawaiian Islands.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
KKCR Hanalei KKCR.
We had that already. I want to play Kumuhina, her song that one that she wrote, which has become a really solid anthem for the present.
Who is Kumuhina?
Kumuhina is the person who, it's really been a joy to be watching her be a part of this case. She is the translator in the case.
Oh, you mentioned her.
Yes. And she has been a really powerful force in a lot of the movement that is looking at the resurgence of Hawaii and the Hawaiian culture as significant in here. This is as big a thing as when the Hokulea first went out. Certainly the worldwide voyage of the Hokulea, you know, it's really all integrated into to these elements. And, you know, she's got TED Talks. She's done so many different things. She is a kumuhula.
Mm-hmm.
But this anthem, you know, is powerful, and its meaning is powerful. And I don't know if I should read it or not, but I'm going to play it. And what I found was kind of fun is at the last inauguration of our county, the little children, this was the dance that they did, the hula that they did, even at the elected inauguration here on Kauai. So it is definitely a rise up for the reclaiming of the culture, and it's good for everybody. It's something that is the vitality and the lifeblood of what was here in the islands. It is as strong as and important as keeping the rivers flowing. And that's another thing that we're going to be talking about a little bit, is this water issues that are coming up and have been coming up. And as they move forward, there's quite a bit to be talking about that. But let's listen to Kumuhina for just a moment here. Am I doing it right? Okay, I gotta try again. Here's the fun thing for Felicia is learning to use my music.
Kuha aheo,
kuha aheo,
e kuha Makakaua.
I chose to do a live event up there on Mauna Kea. That, for me, is when I first met Kumuhina up on Mauna Kea. And that song that was just sung and sung and sung there, on the second day I was there, there was hundreds of people as a part of it. And when we did a march down in Waikiki, a unity march, that song was very, very strongly themed. There's about 10,000 people on Kalakaua Avenue for, I don't know, at least a few miles of a walk. And, of course, she was there. It was a very empowering experience. And it's hard to really put words to what it feels like to be within that environment. And even myself, who wasn't born here, I've lived here really most of my life, but I wasn't born here, and still it really resonates with me. It's really a strong experience. So it's you can tell that this court case really matters, and like having her in there, and then we're seeing different lawyers coming in, one from the university, one from the Hawaiian Studies Department, Bill Fernandez, who is a judge and an author, him and his wife Judy, she's part of the writing team actually, also a lawyer. She's in there. Mauna Kea Trask had come in. This is significant.
Mm-hmm. And who's representing the defendants?
They are what's called pro se.
Mm-hmm.
So they are representing themselves, and, you know, it's definitely a learning curve for them. And like I said, I applaud the court for giving them a lot of latitude in figuring out as best they can. And I also acknowledge the other side of that is the court isn't structured to really allow a win. So it will be interesting to see what comes up. I would say the consistent ask of the defendants is for it to be in a different court. They want to go to land court, where they are really looking at the title first before they determine whether they should be ejected or not. In this particular piece, it's talking about possession, which is, it's hard to decipher the difference necessarily, but who possesses the land as opposed to who owns the land. There's a subtle difference, and normally the presumption is whoever owns the land possesses the land, but an ejection case is a little bit different, and the standard of proof is much, much lower.
So what did you say, pro se? Is that what it's called?
Pro se means without an attorney.
Okay. And why are they doing it pro se?
I would say that there's two real key reasons. One is it costs a whole lot. I was trying to estimate what it's costing the hotel project, the developers, because I'm just guessing, but normally an attorney is $350 an hour. They got two attorneys there. They're flying over, flying back. It's probably, 10-hour days. That's $7,000 just in attorney fees for being right there, mm-hmm. plus the airfare, plus the car rental. I'm not sure who pays for the translator. It's a very expensive endeavor, and when there are multiple court cases. So how do these guys have the money to pay for an attorney? They don't.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that if there is any advantage of them trying to navigate this very difficult process without an attorney, is that the court is being really quite lenient. If they had, or I don't know if lenient is the right word, but flexible is probably the right word. If they had an attorney and it was really expediently done, I mean, the case probably would have been over in one day, and probably there wouldn't be the real look at it, because it's not an act for Noah Espirito Mao as he's speaking. It was really, you're hearing his heartfelt truth. And So
if it's decided against them in this case, that's to determine possession. The judge says, no, you do not have possession, and ejection will proceed. What's the next step?
Well, I mean, I think that if they get ejected, my understanding would be that the police would be called on them and they would probably be ripped off the land.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be that they decide to go. I don't know. That's not up for me to determine what their choice is. Probably whoever loses is going to appeal it, would be my guess.
Okay. So most likely, because I was going to ask on the other side, what if it's determined that the defendants have possession? What happens next?
I think that they would appeal it. There's actually three cases. There's a criminal case, which is, are they criminally trespassing? That hasn't been completed yet. That started last summer. Then there's this civil suit. And then there's a title suit that is really more appropriate in, there's a land court. And for listeners who are more Akamai on this than I am, there's all these layers of court. Then there's something called circuit court. And this is civil court.
Mm-hmm.
And so the judge helps to determine the outcome. And so it's a really long process for the developers. It's a very expensive process that it's definitely slowed them down, and I think it has slowed down their capacity for funding. So there's a strong implication for business. But like I said, if you're buying land that is clearly in conflict, it is maybe somewhat to be anticipated, but that's why people get things at a bargain basement price. I mentioned about water on the 22nd. Can you look on the calendar? I believe that is, it's either a Thursday or Tuesday. It might be 2 weeks from yesterday.
The 22nd of January,
yeah,
is a Monday?
A Monday. Okay, so the 22nd of January, Monday the 22nd of January, the Commission on Water Resource Management is going to be here from Oahu, and they will be at the Kapa'a Neighborhood Center at 11 o'clock. And they will be listening to the community. It's good that they came over from Oahu, and I believe that there will be some sort of a field trip the next day on Tuesday. I don't know if that's open to everybody, but what is going to be presented to them is that there are like six criteria that is supposed to be considered in watershed management. And an awful lot of our stream flow hasn't ever really been mapped. The majority has, but there are many, many streams that have not been mapped all over the island. There has never been a cultural stream flow study on Kauai.
And what do you mean by that, a cultural stream flow
like,
study?
To me, a cultural riparian area, cultural area, like Makaleha, right? Like anybody who's been up Makaleha, the cultural pohaku, the rocks and the petroglyphs and all of it is kind of staggering, right?
Okay.
In Anahola, what we call the taro patch area, really profound.
Mm-hmm.
Limahuli, really profound. Many places, the significant footprint of the pre-contact Hawaiian culture, very, very profound there. And it is there has never been a cultural study on the streams. We don't have any that are considered culturally significant. Like there is literally zero for Kauai. And so when they are looking at stream flow for like this case with Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, there's the issue with the hydro plants there in what is truly Waialiali Stream. We call it the North Fork of the Wailua River, but it is prior to where it meets the North Fork of the Wailua River, so it's Waialiali Stream. There are at least six streams that are diverted almost 100% on low flow days to go to grow farm and the hydro plants, and it goes into this reservoir and then out into Hanamalu Stream. Like about 3 million gallons a day are needed to be diverted over to Lihue and Hanamaulu. I don't think anybody is even beginning to suggest that they shouldn't get that amount of water, but the diversion amount is more like 30 million gallons. So
a day?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, they need 3.
And 30 on a rainy day, 30 million.
Yeah.
And again, an Akamai listener could call it in, but I've looked at the numbers. I'm pulling it out of memory right now, but that's about it. Like maybe 90% of that water just goes, it gets released back into the ocean.
Okay.
So there's enough for everybody. So it's not like saying, you know, we're going to dry up Lihue, or, you know, it's not like somebody's not going to get their water. It's just they don't need to get all the water. And there's ways to have that be recharging the environment, which happens to also be in alignment with Ahupua'a watershed management practices. There's something similar. I have invited Kauai Island Utility Cooperative to come in. I would really like them to be my first guest on what is called the water storage battery.
Mm.
And on first listen, I think water storage battery, that's great because we have, you know, excess capacity on our solar. You know, at this point, you know, we're kind of at full tilt. Like on a sunny day, we don't need anything other than solar. We've gotten to that point. So they're not, you know, like making more agreements with homeowners that they're going to be doing some sort of a buyback program. And but if we have this water storage battery, what happens is that if there's excess power on the grid, that it would be pumping water up into a higher holding location, and then at night, it does a hydro program coming down. So whatever excess you get in the daytime, it's going to be flowing down in the nighttime. So it's a way of not being tied to fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good thing, and I think that there is what I'm hearing, and I don't know enough. I'm not yet Akamai enough, so I'm publicly inviting Kauai Island Utility Cooperative to come in and educate myself and the listeners for what they see is their project. I've been hearing really big numbers, like 11 million gallons. I don't know if that's accurate, from one reservoir to another. So that becomes, again, a water grab that maybe is beyond what's necessary. I'm not an engineer on this process. I don't have any background yet. I haven't really, truly done a strong inquiry on it. But my anticipation that will be something that comes up also. We have just had a settlement for the Waimea River to be returning a lot of water to the Waimea River. I need to, and if we have an Akamai listener, 826-7771, after these big heavy rains, I'm wondering if it cleared out enough of the silt in that river that we're actually seeing more water naturally return to the river. It had been 95% diversion for over 100 years. I believe it was 110 years. So it changes the whole structure of the river. So, you know, there's a lot of transitions, and we don't have to make anybody wrong. We just can start doing things more right, and having dried out some of the key areas for 100 years, you know, we need to, you know, really be refreshing these aquifers. So the 22nd is when that is happening.
Do you have the details on that?
Of the Commission on Water Resource Management, yes, to reframe that again, 11 o'clock, probably 11 to 1 would be my guess, at the Kapa'a Neighborhood Center. And so they make the recommendation to the Department of Land and Natural Resources and the Board of Land and Natural Resources, who will be helping to make a definitive decision relative to the 65-year lease that is wanted by Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. And what has come up is that really the biggest beneficiary of that water is Grove Farm. So should Grove Farm also be on the permit and also be under consideration for how that is looked at and reported? So we have those kind of considerations. Do we have a caller who would like to join this conversation? Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, Felicia, it's Bridget Hammerquist.
Hey, Bridget.
How are you?
Good.
Yeah, I was just listening to your show and appreciate your sharing with people out there what some of our issues are, and I thought I'd call in if you wanted any.
I appreciate it, because if I can compliment you, you are impressively smart, and you have just a razor-sharp mind for getting the details. If you could turn your radio off, that would be great, but please share a little details on this, because it's important.
So we met with KIUC this morning, actually, met with David Bissell and several of his key staff, the power manager, and they do plan to restore stream flow. They did give us, kind of pressed what's the timeline, and they did say it would be within the next couple of months. They have sort of a staged approach in mind.
Okay.
They can pull the ditches, and they can actually open up the gates on the ditches and get water out into the stream without changing the actual diversion, without changing the concrete structure itself, and without the state needing to weigh in. When it gets to revising the actual diversion, which is a concrete diverter, then they are supposed to have C1
Commission on Water Resource Management.
The diverters are constructed with state approval, so to alter them, they say, requires Commission on Water Resource Management input, and that's part of what's going on now. There's a interim in-stream flow study that's underway that the state has been measuring flow in the streams, and they did say today that it's true that they don't really have a total on the volume that's being funneled through the two hydro plants at Waiahe, because they are receiving waters from at least four 100% base flow diversions operated by Grove Farm, but they also are getting water from other unnamed streams as well, that there's kind of this large open ditch system, and it's all coming in. So they're just now putting gauges on the what they call the tail raceways, which is measuring the water when it comes out from the hydros. And they're going to have measurements on what's coming off of the Waialeale stream, or North Fork Waialeale. And then they're also going to have measurements on Waikoko, because they control those diversions. And between that and what's coming out at the bottom of the power plants, still have an idea of what their total water volume is that's being taken. But we gave them an idea today that is being done in other countries. I know it was done in Taiwan, for instance, and that is, it's kind of an interesting, it calls for like a paradigm shift in your thinking, and Adam Asquith actually came up with this, and it's really a plausible idea, and that is to build impounds or collection areas, and you can use the land. Like, there are biologists on island who say that the area up in the northern tributaries has some real natural ravines that could be closed off and used for a reservoir. And what you do is you use the storm flow instead of the base flow. The base flow is what goes down the stream and would go down the stream every day if the diverter wasn't in place. It's what's naturally flowing through the stream. And when they're taking 100% of base flow, what they're doing is creating dry stream beds by definition on fair weather days. And so on days where it's not, you know, good rain coming down, you've got dry stream beds below the diversions, and that would create a real impact to the natural fauna and flora, the biota, as they say, and the creatures, you know, that live, the opi that live in the stream. So it's a problem, and it's they said that there'd be certain mindset, certain expense that they would have to undergo, that they're not sure they want to do that. But it's an interesting thought, and it was a real genuinely good recommendation that he made, and I do know at least of one other country that has filled reservoirs with storm flow as opposed to taking base flow. So it's a whole topic of conversation. It's kind of exciting that it's coming up now. It wasn't, you know, they wanted to know today why, you know, after these diversions have been in place for almost 100 years, why is the public suddenly getting interested in it? And, well, the reality is that sugar used them for many, many years, and the sugar plantations are, you know, really within the last 15 or 20 years, they've stopped, and so the ditch network that they needed hasn't been in play, and a lot of the ditch maintenance has been deferred because nobody needed it. So a lot of the ditches are in poor repair, they said, and so there's a lot of problems through the system in general. But we opened we had a good meeting, and I think we opened a channel of dialogue, and this is just one of the users, basically, KIUC. But Grow Farm is a much more substantial user and consumer of water on Kauai, and as water becomes more of an issue with weather change, and we know we're going to have periods where our rainfall is going to differ now. We've been told by USGS that instead of our long, you know, light rains, we're going to have storms and sudden dumps. So we'll get these horrific rain that will just plummet and help the land with water and then turn off, like a faucet that goes full force and then turns off. And so it's going to be a different style of rain. And that makes for a difference in the groundwater and the aquifer and our wells. And so being concerned about water and being mindful of it is a good idea.
So I want to tell the listener that you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei K-A-Q-A Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox, with Felicia and Marshall. On the phone with us at the moment is Bridget Hammerquist, and we are talking a little bit about KIUC. So I want to applaud them for coming and meeting with you. Are you having you guys come in to meet with them about citizen concerns and being prepared for the Commission on Water Resource Management? Did they, I would presume that they're planning to come to that meeting on the 22nd. Will KIUC be at that meeting, or are they meeting separately with them?
I don't know that there's a plan for them to meet with Kauai Commission on Water Resource Management on that visit. Actually, Felicia, COWRM is coming in response to the testimony that Kiahi Waialeale gave, which you were part of,
yeah,
on December 8th. And they don't really, they aren't considering it a public meeting as much as a meeting that they're coming to meet with the Hui that raise these concerns and gather information. But I'm sure they would welcome any information that they can gather. And according to the people at KIUC, they're in regular contact with COWRM, and one of the consultants that was at the KIUC meeting this morning said that actually the state is really stepping up the pace on getting the interim and stream flow standards and getting the information on how much volume of flow the rivers streams actually should have. And so and biologists have to get involved. Hope Kalai, who you know has worked really hard on this,
she's
a biologist.
She's really good.
Are really knowledgeable. Adam was with U.S. Fish and Wildlife when the Poopoo Vine Money snail was identified and the critical habitat was identified and established up there for that endangered species. So it's, you know, it's all really kind of coming together. And we told them, you know, and they said, why are you just interested now? We said, well, actually, there have been people working on this for
years.
10 years on island, years.
Yeah, that was an interesting question. I was there when that was asked, and that was almost really surprising to the point of being close to galling to have that question asked when there has been, at least for me as a KKCR programmer, when it's been a persistent burning issue for, you know, probably 5 years on the programming. So it, you know, but that's it, sometimes the left hand doesn't always talk to the right hand, especially when there's an ocean in between. So on that point, I know that you are very busy, and I want to just thank Bob Hammerquist, Colonel Bob Hammerquist, for coming to all these meetings and events, and he is approaching 96 years old. So your husband is, you know, committed to serving this country and his community, but Are you going to come to the opening of the state legislature? Are you guys coming, or no pressure? Just wondering. That's a week from tomorrow.
I'm thinking about it. I haven't made a determination yet.
Okay. Because, you know, like what I'm going to invite the listeners in another moment here to be giving some consideration is what is really important for people who don't know. Last week, last month, I've been kind of saying it. I haven't gone as deep as I would like to, but it is the time is now to be telling our legislators what is critically important to us, because after the opening of the legislature, they will take a couple few days to decide what's on the agenda. And typically there's about 3,000 suggestions, and maybe 1,000 of them actually makes it on the agenda, and that's a whole lot to be dealing with in a short period of time. Marshall, we have another caller, right?
We sure do.
Do they have? They want to join this conversation, or is it? Are they interested in the same topic? Or
I didn't ask.
Okay.
I can sign off, Felicia. No problem.
Okay. Let me see. I'm going to pull them on first and ask them if they want to ask you something. And if they don't, then I'm going to let you go.
Okay. You can probably hear Bob in the background.
Thanks. That's okay. Aloha. You're on the air. Are you calling for me or for Bridget?
I was calling to make an announcement.
Okay, all right.
For Bridget, but I certainly appreciate her efforts as well.
Sure, so Bridget, we'll let you go.
All right, thanks.
Aloha,
Felicia.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha. Okay, caller, what is on your mind?
Hi, it's Auntie Jo. I just wanted to let everybody know that there is a group of folks, or a gathering of family and friends of incarcerated folks, which meets occasionally about once a month or so. And that we will be gathering at the Ha Coffee Bar on Monday, the 15th of this month, Martin Luther King Day, at around 10 o'clock. If anyone would like to come and share with others going through similar stuff, brainstorm about how we can maybe make a difference. And there are also some new issues, I guess, with regard to paying for phone calls for friends or relatives, that kind of stuff. And sometimes when people get together as a group, we can affect some change that helps everybody.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm planning on being there, and I've been at a lot of these meetings. And so I'm glad that you called in about this, because this is an excellent example when you're looking at what you want for your legislative package. And Willa Sparrow has put out some legislation last year that didn't make it through. We need to look at what that was. One of the big issues among some of the relatives of the incarcerated in there, Greg Silva passed away a year ago, November, and the family was not given his death information.
Right.
And Civil Beat was able to get it. But it should be that the family is given the death report, and there is no law in place that sets that policy. So I did ask Will Sparrow to, again, put that out, but it would be appropriate, like this is an example, if a group like Friends and Family of the Incarcerated has a list of bills that they want put out, and it really needs to be thought about even before Monday, so I'm giving a heads up if anybody is listening from within that group to look at what is already existing, maybe, and make sure that Dee Morikawa, Nadine Nakamura, Jimmy Tokioka, and Senator Ron Kochi, those are our reps and our senator, are aware that that is something that is important, because that's how to get it on the agenda.
Yeah, I think you're talking about that Senate Bill 2199.
Do you have it in front of you?
That Will the Sparrow thing from last year?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Can you just, like, repeat, you know, say, yeah, ditto, let's try that again.
That's right. And so it's really important to make those calls or to make the email. It's important to do more than complain. It's important to ask. And then Justin Caller, if you're listening, and we'll need to kind of tag him into this. And I will say for our chief prosecutor, he's pretty good at being responsive even when somebody's tugging on his shoulder at the last moment. But like getting a letter of support from Justin Caller would be a good example. Lou Lindsay, I believe, is our new warden. He was an assistant warden. I believe he's the new chief warden at Kauai Community Correctional Center, getting support from him. So I'm giving this as an example, but to anybody listening, you know, if you don't want something or you do want something, don't wait for 3 weeks to start talking about it. It needs to be before the legislature starts.
Right.
And so
I found out about this bill thing yesterday, so...
Yeah, well, I'm telling you and I'm telling everybody. So it's just a share. So thank you so much for calling that in. I will see you Monday, you said, at 10:30?
11. Around 10, so it's, you know, 10. 10 Kauai style.
Okay, so at Ha Cafe on Rice Street in Lihue.
On Rice Street in Lihue.
Okay, and anybody's welcome, and it's informal.
Yes, and I did call to make sure they're open on Martin Luther King Day, and they said they were.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
So thank you very much for your show, Felicia, and all you do to try to bring the community together. That's what we're trying to do here. I think the more voices with regard to folks that have folks incarcerated and so on that come together, the more powerful we can be. One person here or there with a letter might not be nearly as powerful as several people with lots of letters.
That's right. That's right.
Anyway, mahalo
okay.
Nui and
mahalo nui. Auntie Jo is somebody who helps to keep me inspired because she does show up at meetings and she does do her work. There's this hearing set on bus stop rules. This will be this Friday, the 12th at 10 a.m. Transportation Agency, which is just down the street from the courthouse, just a little bit more towards Vandenaha Stadium. They still don't tell us what those rules are. There's this proposed administrative rules. There's something like 600 rule changes. Policy makes a big difference. It's not law, and so they just sort of slip in under the radar.
600 rule changes for what? For the county altogether?
For the state.
For the state.
These are Hawaii administrative rule changes. So, like, for example, I don't have it right in front of me, but, like, in the agriculture pieces, the Agribusiness Development Corporation, last I looked, was set to be... exempt from the rules of environmental impact statements and the rules that most other landowners have. And that one I really wonder about because we have so much contention that has happened over the pesticide issues, things like that. So when they do a blanket case like that, they have a big change on how environmental impact statements are created. It seems like a workaround based on the loss that happened relative to the pushback on the dairy in Mahaulipu. And coincidentally, the same entity that owns the dairy, you know, if you go up the line, owns the paper and is one of the very big ones that financed the push for changing this rule change. So that's a challenge. I want to give us a couple of special events. This is One is a fundraiser, and one is from the Department of Health. And then we'll be right back.
It's time again for the Kauai North Shore Lions Club annual golf tournament, Saturday, January 13th at the Mackay Golf Course in Princeville. Our sponsors are Aloha Roofing, Kauai Tent, JB Luxury Properties, Hunt Development, Oceanfront Sotheby's, and Vince Mangato. The tournament is shotgun start at 8 a.m. and it includes lunch with lucky ticket drawings. All proceeds benefit scholarships for North Shore students. More information is available at the Mackay Pro Shop or KauaiNorthShoreLions.org or call 808-482-4150.
The County of Kauai announces household hazardous waste collection events for residents only. Bring your unwanted hazardous products for safe disposal free of charge. Acceptable items include pesticides, solvents, car products, oil-based paints, and more. Collections will take place on 2 days, Saturday, January 13th, in Kilauea at the mini golf course, and in Kapa'a at the base yard by the recycling bins, and on Sunday, January 14th, in Lahui at the Kauai Resource Center and in Hanapepe at the refuse transfer station. Events are from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Please note that latex paint is not toxic and will not be accepted. For instructions on disposing of latex paint and questions about the event, please call the County Recycling Office at 241-4841 or log on to our website at kauai.gov/hhw. That's kauai.gov/hhw. Help keep our garden aisle green. Recycle.
Okay, Saturday at Kilauea. I got to make a mental note because it's really wonderful when they do that, and it's really important to go down and be able to bring those things there. It's helpful when it's in your community, in your neighborhood, and it's really good that we don't do the hazardous waste. I know I said Department of Health earlier, goofed, but that's rat, lungworm. Wash your vegetables. Do a good job with that.
Yeah, I cook mine.
You cook yours, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I cook mine, too, but when we were talking about at the ledge, legislature here, I'm going to sound like I'm such a hey, the ledge. It's a ledge. It is like a meet and greet with the legislature. It's like a big party, sort of. But you go, and it's really an important time to be making eye contact. Like the legislators are looking to be interfacing with their community, and you can walk around with a package of things that you think are important. I mean, if you're sharp at it, then when people have lobbyists, they're paid to be sharp at it. They might be sending it to the legislators for a couple of months in advance saying, hey, this is important. This is a change we need to have. And then they go and they're able to look at the legislators and say, again, this particular issue is really critical to me. And you also will be seeing who is the department heads or, I mean, the chairs of the different committees. Like there might be a finance committee or an agriculture committee. And so those people are good to talk to about your specific interest. And not everybody can go, but if you know people who are going or you care about it, maybe pitch in $20 or something to help pay for these plane tickets. It takes a lot of effort when people do go over there and speak for their peers.
But, you know, you're speaking about the lobbyists over there, the paid lobbyists. Who are some of the most influential lobbyists, either as individuals or the companies that they're working for?
Well, I would think a really big example would be the Visitors Bureau, right? That's they are going to be making sure that the visitor industry is looked after and taken care of. Hawaii Crop Improvement Association is the big name for the biotech industry.
Okay.
Hawaii Farm Bureau, Hawaii Farmers Union United, those are two different, so we've just heard from three organizations
right. That
are looking at agriculture. You know, there's, I'm sure, like the Medical Association or the Nurses Association, the Teachers Association, the unions. They go and they, why it's called lobbying, is they go hang out in the lobby to, and that's like at the bottom, you know, to be able to talk to the people who are making the decisions. It's not that they're doing something bad. I'm not putting them down. But when people do it as a job, they're much more effective at it. And when you are a citizen, you're going to, you know, just show up and try and say, this is important to me. And, like, for example, one thing that, you know, I took a big interest on, last year there was 6 forced vaccination bills out there, and we defeated 5 of the 6. Now, am I against vaccinations? I'm not against vaccinations, but forced vaccinations, anything mandatory like that when it is so central to your health, you know, not everybody's health is the same, you know, to be able to make choices, you know, when people have fragile health systems, like I have trouble with that. So that would be maybe parents who are unhappy with that. They would go and lobby at some level. They can be non-professional lobbies. Midwives are definitely under a lot of scrutiny. So that's a group that might be lobbying against all the containment. And it might be obstetricians who are lobbying to contain midwives.
Okay. And what sorts of things do you know right now would the Kauai Farmers Union United be lobbying for?
Well, tomorrow night, good that you asked, at 6 o'clock the Farmers Union meeting, and they are, you know, going to be having that as one of the elements on the agenda. And I will be on In the Garden on the Farm tomorrow with Paul Massey. I believe Yosh is going to be on there, too, from the Kilauea Community Farm, Ag Park. He's going to be on in the second hour. And in the second half hour, I'm going to be on the first half hour, and we're going to be talking about some of our legislative elements on agriculture.
Oh, great. Well, then, yeah, it's a timely question then. Would you like to hear the full agenda for tomorrow night's Farmers Union meeting?
Sure, yes.
Okay. At 6:30, Michael Rodriguez of Natural Solutions will discuss the benefits of ormus material, minerals made from seawater on the farm as a solution for cheap, easy, and sustainable mineral replenishment in a liquid clay form that binds to our soils. And he'll do a demonstration as well. And then Sarah Franklin, who's an Irish permaculturist living and working in East Africa on sustainable agriculture systems in Kenya, she is a longtime permaculture expert, and she'll be sharing her experiences with large-scale permaculture systems and is interested in networking with the Kauai Ohana. So that sounds like a good meeting. Locavore Potluck starts at 6. Meeting starts at 6:30. That's at the Anahola Clubhouse Wednesday, tomorrow.
So I'll be at that. Another thing that is coming up is the Kauai Island Utility Cooperative Board candidates, and they've named those candidates. It really does matter who's on the board. It looks like we have a choice of quite a lot of well-qualified people. I'm just going to name them in alphabetical order. I don't know a ton about every one of them. There's one that I don't know, really. But Daniel Erickson, he is a professor at KCC, Kauai Community College, and I know he works in sustainability. Pat Geegan, he is an existing board member. He's definitely has been part of the Kauai Community Radio team. He Zero Waste Kauai and Apollo Kauai. He's definitely a sustainability person. Scott Jarman, another KKCR person, but he's the head of United Way, the executive director. David Eha, he's done so many things, actually, kind of forgetting offhand how to describe him. I think he was even like a provost of the college, if I'm remembering correctly. I know his grandkids more, who are my kids' friends. But he is an existing board member. Janet Koss, I have yet to learn about her, know more about her. Phil Talkbeyond, he has been the chair before. He's been on it a long time, and I tend to know people through their kids. He's a good surf great-grandpa. So,
what do you say? A good, great surf?
His great granddaughter is a surfer and a competitive surfer.
Okay.
So I always see him at all the surf meets, and he's out there kind of encouraging his great granddaughter. And, you know, He gets grandpa points for me on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that has nothing to do with power, but I'm just acknowledging, just trying to put these names out. I like it when KKCR is able to do a forum with them. I hope that we can do that. It is really important that we know more about them. There are very big decisions that are going, and the deadline is March 10th, but what happens is you get it in the mail, and you mail in the ballots, and most people mail them in right when they get them, so it's really important to be looking into, do you like the direction that the power cooperative is going? And I'll just speak for myself. For the most part, I like Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. A couple of our other programmers tease me and say, you're always carrying water for KIUC. But if you ask KIUC, they say, Felicia, you're always like putting a fire under us. What I would like to see better from them is more of that C, cooperative. And, you know, we were just having several different conversations about how do we manage this water storage battery and how do we make sure that people are part of that discussion. How do we make sure that they aren't being unnecessarily used as a front for a different organization that is either taking too much water or something like that. That's something that I worry about. That's a concern I have. But for the most part, I think we have an awesome power company, power cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thankful we've got a cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
And I am so proud of the fact how much we are moving towards renewables.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing. I am really struggling here to pull up my friend, my beautiful friend, Lopaka Baptiste. He passed away a couple weeks ago. A wonderful person, Pua Chandler Baptiste's husband and father to a number, and an amazing stepfather and step-grandfather, part of the Chandler family, Chandler and Mahawiki family, married into that. His service is this weekend, and I am unable to pull it up on the internet here for the details, but Lopaka, we love you, and he's just such a bright, smiling, beautiful soul, and it's a really a loss, but something I have gratitude for is that he was great and happy and healthy until, like, a quick and unexpected exit that I think was painless. So sometimes you almost can't ask for a better exit. But anyway, blessings on his life. Speaking of blessings on life, at the event at the legislature, one of the reasons I might go, and certainly Paul is going to go, and we will talk about this a little bit tomorrow too, is
that's Paul Massey.
Paul Massey in the garden on the farm is Jerry Kananui, amazing teacher, mentor, kupuna on kava, kalo, the pohaku for pounding poi. You know, he's just been an incredible teacher and pillar in the agriculture community and the Hawaiian cultural community. So he passed away. We talked about him a few shows back, but there is going to be a ceremony in his honor down there in the atrium of the legislature. And no doubt there will be a lot of overlap with the celebration or memorial. I don't know what you call it when it's something kind of not happy. I'll see what they're talking about.
Commemoration. Maybe.
Commemoration with Queen Liliuokalani. It's 125th anniversary of the overthrow. It happens to be on January 17th, the very same day as the opening of the legislature, and it will be at Iolani Palace, which is right next to the Honolulu Hale and the legislative building. And so there is layers of symbolism in all of that. But so it will be an important day for, you know, the Lahui. And even on that note, because we have people listening across the island, so I honor you on January 13th. Can you check? I believe that's this Saturday from 9 to 12 a.m. There is a Hale'a'o Kupono Teacher Workshop on Politics in Hawaii. So
that is this Saturday.
That is this Saturday. So they are going to talk about Americanization in the public schooling effects. And this is right on point with this lawsuit that's happened. So today on the 13th, it's about the Hawaiian Kingdom. And this is for teachers to be learning. It's intended for teachers. And it's got Dr. Keanu Sai, Dr. Donovan Presa, and Dr. Kamana Beamer. I've seen all of them speak. Just really, really compelling.
So this is here on Kauai?
No, it looks like it's on Oahu.
Oh, okay.
But people are going to be going over there. And as I said, we've got people listening across the islands. I can see that.
Okay, so where is it going to be held on Saturday the 13th?
Let's see, WCC, maybe that is Waimea Community College. Should I look at this here?
Okay. How about a website or phone number or anything?
I'm going to put it on the KC's, I mean, the KKCR webpage. It's on mine, but then there's a part two and a part three. I guess I don't have time to talk about that right now, but it's February 3rd and then February 10th. And so, like, the third part says, how to make your curriculum less oppressive to Hawaiian students. Really, really important. And I have a lot of focus on the incarceration rate, and we had a call about that. And when you look, it is so disproportionately Hawaiian, and they get longer sentences, and they typically are pretty trivial, nonviolent incarceration pieces. A lot of it's poverty and politics. But the part two is Americanization in the public schooling and effects. And that's at the Kamehameha Schools Community Learning Center at Ma'ili'ili. And that's Dr. Umi Perkins and La'akea Carvalho, both of whom I have seen, and they're very good. So I've had several people share that with me. It's time for Jazz with John. We're going to hear the county council report, and I applaud all the people who take the time to participate in public policy, because that's how you are proactive and not being bummed out later if you don't like what happens. So, Marshall, as always, thank you for being part of Kauai Soapbox.
Oh, it's so my pleasure, Felicia. Thank you. And thank you for being down in court all the time and all the meetings and everything else and bring us the information on KKZR.
Okay, well, you're welcome. Aloha.